Meet Reed Lance Rosenthal, rancher, number one best-selling award-winning author, and unabashedly, unapologetically, on the right side of the outstanding issues of our generation. But don't try to fence him in. Sometimes his positions will surprise you, because Reed is definitely his own man, with his own opinions. You might love him, you might hate him, but you won't be able to stop listening. Step over to the right side with Reed.
Happy Saturday, folks. It's Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. Wow, do we have a pile of stuff to go over this morning. Holy moly, what a week. But you know, before we get started, I have a story and a half to tell you. Ah, that ought to intrigue you. Now, what we're going to be covering after my story and a half, we're going to talk a little bit about this Russia-Trump thing. We're going to talk a little bit about Comey. And I'm going to point out some things you probably have not been brought to your attention, shall we say, by the mainstream media, who is, you know, they're off the deep end along with the lefties. And we're going to talk about the lefties being off the deep end, and particularly in terms of violence. And violence not only on college campuses, which you see on the news, I mean, some of it is just unfriggin' believable, but violence against elected representatives. And that most of this you haven't heard. But we'll talk about how this ties into the left's plan to derail Trump's agenda. That's really what this is about, folks. You know, they were this close to getting their little progressive jaws fully clamped down on the heart of America. And then came Trump's election. And it's all being undone. And they can't stand it. So what they need to do is try and stop it. And they have about a three-pronged approach. Put the media to the side. I mean, they're pathetic. One thing that's going to come out of this, and I've said it before, is the media is done. CNN and MSNBC and all those guys, they're done. Oh, yeah, you know, they'll get the tune-in by the 30% that you'll never reach anyway. The lefty lefties, the progressive left, the alt-left, the Islamist left. But they're done. I mean, I can't even, and I bet you're just like me, I can't even stand to listen to them. I don't even get angry anymore. I just kind of chuckle and go, you know, you're done. And we're going to be talking a little bit about voter fraud. This is something that you didn't know. There's actually a commission being put together by President Trump to investigate voter fraud, voter registration, voter rolls throughout the United States. About damn time that somebody did something about this. And shame on the Republicans who came before Trump, who did nothing. The Democrats, of course, love it because they get their extra 2, 3, 4, 5 million votes between illegal aliens, dead people voting, dogs voting, people voting in more than one state or more than one district. You know, on and on and on. I mean, the fraud is legion. And the more the left says there isn't any, or there's just a smidgen, the more you know it's huge. Huge, as Donald would say. And we're going to talk about Keith, or Seth Rich. You know, the poor guy who was murdered, the DNC staffer. And some of the things which have come to light this week on that, which, of course, the mainstream media isn't, they're not speaking a word about it, not a word, because at the heart of Seth Richards is Obama, Jarrett, Clinton, and Podesta. As by the way, is those four are at the heart of the Russian deal, too, but that's another show. And we're going to talk a little bit about all the special elections going on. And I'm going to let you know some good news and some bad news. The bad news you probably haven't heard. The good news, you know, GN40 won in Montana. Am I particularly impressed with him, by the way? Not particularly. Was he way better than Quist, you know, Bernie Sanders lefty? Absolutely. And but the fact that he won after doing a slam down of a reporter, whatever version of the story you want to go with, and the fact that he's not really well liked in Montana. You know, I have relatives in Montana, and not a popular guy. But the fact that he won, I think it was by 8 points, was it? Yeah? Yeah, my producer's checking. I think it was by 8 points. The fact that an unpopular guy who beat up a reporter, more or less, the day before the election, won by 8 points in a purple state. Montana is not a red state. The Democrats are trying to portray it as such, but I am very familiar with Montana. And it is a purple state. Remember, it had Senator Baucus, remember the guy who drafted the Obamacare bill? And it currently has Senator Tester. Oh, my God. And it has a Democratic governor. So this is not a state that is red, 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 like, let's say, Wyoming, where it's just Republican, 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 Republican. So the fact that he won should be sending a message to the Democrats that what they're doing ain't working. But they don't care. We've talked about that. And then we're going to talk a little bit about Mr. Trump's budget. Not a whole lot. Not going to get down the weeds. It's going to be changed substantially in the House and the Senate and through all sorts of various nefarious ways. But there are a couple things I want to point out to you, which I don't think anybody has. And that is the fact that despite all the wailing and moaning by the Republicans and the Democrats, oh, they're cutting this and they're cutting that and the children are going to die and people are going to starve and oh, blah, 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 cry me a river. It doesn't cut anything, folks. It doesn't, listen to me now, it doesn't cut anything. I'll explain it to you when we get there in the show. And then we're going to be talking about on our very last segment, or who knows what segment it'll come out to. We're going to be talking about Barry Obama, Barack Hussein Obama, 44th President, gag me, of the United States, over in Berlin, talking at the Brandenburg Wall. I guess he thought he was going to draw the crowds that Reagan did. He drew, like, nobody. I don't know if you noticed, but there was, like, hardly any coverage. I laughed my butt off, right? There's hardly any coverage of his sudden trip to Europe while the G20 meeting was going on. He thought he'd steal Trump's thunder. And he'd prove that he could outdraw Trump and he'd get more press. And, you know, he'd plead for his legacy to the European community. Hey, Barry, the Europeans don't vote in the United States. Hate to tell you, we're not citizens of the world yet, Barry. We're Americans. I know you hate it. Anyway, like, almost nobody showed up. He got, like, almost no press coverage. I mean, he got like a few minutes, literally a few minutes, on MSNBC, CNN, ABC, CB. I mean, like, oh yeah, Barack Obama made a speech and they showed like a 10-second clip. That was it. The rest of the news was Trump. Not particularly nice Trump, but Trump. So poor Barry, he was just thrown to the wolves. His plan to usurp Trump's ascendancy in the news media from his international exploits was dashed. It was foiled. All right. Am I a little slap happy this morning? Yes, it's very early. What time this morning is it? Oh, it's 3:30 in the morning. All you sleepyheads out there are going to be listening to this show. Your erstwhile reporter, your humble host, is up at 3:30 in the morning to bring you on the Right Side Radio. I hope you like it, because it's coming at you starting right now. First of all, my story and a half. Here's the half story. Got a number of emails from folks who were intrigued by my little story about bureaucracy, but I was using an actual insurance matter that's going on with some of the ranches right now as an example of how, of the lack of common sense, the adherence to dogma, and the stupidity of bureaucrats and how it costs 10 times more time and 10 times more money when bureaucrats get hold of common sense things which could be solved in the snap of a fingers for a pittance of the dollars. So go back, I think it's two shows ago, and listen to that little story. So here's the next installment. That's what I call it, a half story. So on May 15th, on behalf of the ranchers, I send the insurance company a letter. I outline all the costs we've incurred on this stuff, this repair stuff, and it has to do with water. And I set it all out, and I say, you know, and I forget what the number was. It was, you know, something right under $20,000. And I said, you have 72 hours to accept our figures. And 72 hours was, I think, May 18th. On May 16th, I get an email from the insurance company. Oh, we'll be back to you on May 17th. May 17th comes and goes. Not a peep. Not a chirp, not a leaf fluttering, nothing. On May 18th, I write them a letter. I'm sorry, May 19th in the morning, I write them a letter. I gave them their full day on May 18th to respond per the deadline. They did not. I write them a letter and say, hey, you said you'd get back to us on May 17th. You didn't. And now we've been up at the site and we've encountered other conditions because of the weather, which we warned you was coming in, and you did nothing. You sat on your bureaucratic butts. And now the costs are not X. Now the costs are X plus. And you have 4 days, whatever it was, to accept these costs. Not a peep. On Monday, May 22nd, by UPS, I get a check from the insurance company with a letter saying this is full and final settlement and the end of the road and blah, 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 blah. The check is for something less, several thousand dollars less than the figure given them to them on May 15th and several thousand dollars more less than the revised figure given them to on May 19th after they missed their May 18th deadline. And I write a letter to the insurance company and say, you know, here's kind of the timeline, and now we've encountered more conditions because of your dilatory practices, because you're sitting on your butt with your nose buried in a rule book rather than your brains engaged on common sense, and now there's more weather coming in, which is going to be more water, which is going to be more damage, and blah, blah, blah. So the end still has to be written on this half a story of this morning. To be continued. Kind of like the last page of my novels. To be continued. All right, now we're going to get into the story. The one part of the one and a half stories of this morning. So I want you to close your eyes. In a galaxy far, far away in a time long, long ago. And there's this magical, mystical place where people are happy and they go about their daily lives with smiles and they strive to better themselves and better their kids. And the average life expectancy is only 47 years old. Fuel for vehicles is sold only in drugstores. Only 14% of the homes of this happy place have a bathtub. Only 8% of the homes of this place in a pure state of bliss have a telephone. The maximum speed limit in this nirvana is 10 miles per hour. That's 10 miles per hour, maximum speed limit. The tallest structure on the planet where this magical, mystical place is located is the Eiffel Tower. The average wage is 22 cents per hour. That's 22 cents per hour. The average worker, even though happy as clams, makes between $200 and $400 per year. That's per year, folks. $200 to $400 per year. A really good CPA is making a fortune, $2,000 a year. A really good dentist is making even more of a fortune, $2,500 a year. And a veterinarian, somewhere between $1,500 and $4,000 per year, depending upon if they're rural or urban, big pet, little pet. A mechanical engineer, top of the line, pay $5,000 a year. 95% of all the births in this ecstatic place, this place full of joy, every day, take place at home, not in a hospital. 90% of all doctors in this terrific place with great health care, so healthy you could have your baby at home, 90% of doctors have no college education. Zero. Nada. None. Sugar costs only 4 cents a pound. Eggs are 14 cents a dozen. That's 14 cents a dozen. That's a little over 1 penny per egg. Coffee is 15 cents a pound. Think about that next time. Hopefully it's not Starbucks, you're boycotting them. But the next time you go into your favorite local coffee shop and shell out your $4 or $5 for a latte. 15 cents per pound. You know how many cups a pound makes, right? Like a bunch. Unless, of course, I'm making it, then it makes way fewer. Women typically wash their hair once a month. They didn't have all the fancy cosmetics and all this kind of stuff and the rinse and the shampoo and the conditioner and the highlighter and the strengthener and, you know, the 9 bottles that get used. They used an egg or they used borax. Canada, by the way, passed a law around this time, this time long, long ago in a galaxy far away, that did not, it prohibited poor people. People making less than $200 a year was considered poor. Passed a law that prohibited poor people from entering into their country for any reason. The 5 leading causes of death in Happyville, by the way, were pneumonia and the flu, tuberculosis, diarrhea, heart disease, and stroke. Not that different a list, but kind of. The population of this, of one of the towns in this happy, happy place in a galaxy far, far away and a time long, long ago was named Las Vegas. Its total population was 30. That's 30. 30. And most of them probably related. 2 out of 10 adults were illiterate, could not read or write. 20% of the population could not read or write. 6% of all these happy people, and happy they were, had graduated from high school. That is a 6% high school graduation rate. It just so happens that marijuana, heroin, morphine, you could buy over the counter at local corner drugstores. No kidding. In fact, the advertisements for heroin, I'm quoting, heroin clears the complexion, gives buoyancy to the mind, regulates the stomach, bowels, and is, in fact, a perfect guardian of health, unquote. That was the advertisement for over-the-counter heroin. 18%, despite the incomes, 18% of all households in Happy Place had one full-time servant or domestic help. And in this entire Happy Place, entire country, there were 230, that's 230, reported murders. We're talking about the entire country. That happens in a month in Chicago now. So this Happyville, this place in a galaxy far, far away and a time long, long ago, where do you think Happy Place is in our magical, mystical story, which, by the way, is factually completely accurate? That place was called the United States of America, and the year is 1917, 1917. Think about that. I found that set of facts remarkable. Remarkable. All right, let's talk about poor Seth Rich. This is a 27-year-old DNC staffer shot twice in the back. Police, D.C. police, who, by the way, did you know are run by Congress? Did you know the D.C. police are run by Congress and they're funded by Congress? In fact, Debbie Wasserman Schultz got her sorry butt. She is so disgusting. Got her sorry butt in a ringer for threatening them with appropriations this past week because they're investigating a staffer and they took the... I don't want to even... It's just unbelievable. The bottom line of this is that Seth Rich was pronounced dead by the police. This is the official story. And that he was the victim of a early morning, that is, you know, like 3:30 in the morning, robbery. Except, we come to find out, and I've talked to you about this before, that he had his watch, he had his bracelet, he had his jewelry, he had his wallet, all the money was in the wallet, and all the credit cards were in the wallet. Huh, I wonder what they were robbing. He even had his shoes, so it wasn't his shoes. And I don't mean to make light of this. I'm making light of the report. Well, several things have come out in the past week. First of all, the owner of the bar where Seth Rich kind of hung out, kind of an upscale bar in D.C., the owner of that bar mysteriously visited the White House, that is the White House, Obama's White House, 4 days before Seth Rich was killed. In fact, several intrepid reporters, and this was reported through the D.C. Clothesline, by the way, on May 21st, reported that, number one, he may have been drugged when he was leaving that bar. I quote, "Rich was unusually drunk. The 27-year-old DNC staffer could normally throw back Bell's beer for hours without a problem. But that night he was uncharacteristically unsteady on his feet as he made his way out the door. That was just not Seth. I never saw him drunk or even tipsy." By the way, that quote is out of Newsweek. Now, the gentleman who owns the bar is named Joseph P. Capone. I don't know if he's any relation or not to the famous Al Capone. But his name is Joseph P. Capone. He visited the Obama White House for certain and for sure 4 days before. In fact, they resurrected both his Facebook and Twitter posts with pictures taken from the White House. And they checked the White House log, and sure enough, he was logged in to go to the East Wing of the White House, which, by the way, is where the First Lady usually hangs out. Or who knows who else. So let's take those two dots. 4 days before Seth Rich is killed, The owner of the bar that he frequents often, his favorite bar, is in the White House. Never been in the White House before or since. And that has been conclusively proven. Number two, witnesses say that when Seth left the bar that night, he appeared unusually drunk, although he had not been drinking any more than normal, and normally he was never drunk. Number three, he was shot twice in the back, and the police said it was a robbery, but nothing was taken. Let's get to number four. Now, this is an unverified report. This is from IntelliHub, and this is May 23rd. Supposedly, this is a guy who's going to testify, in fact, but a fourth-year resident at Washington Hospital Center, which is where Seth Rich was taken after he was shot. Basically, he claims that Seth Rich was alive, operated on by this guy, and recovering, and should have, by all means, made it through this. I'll read this to you. This is fourth-year surgery guy talking, surgery resident. Seth Rich was shot twice with three total gunshot wounds, entry and exit and entry. He was taken to the OR emergently, where we performed an X-lap and found a small injury to segment 3 of the liver, which was packed, and several small bowel injuries, pretty common for gunshots to the back exiting the abdomen, which we resected, 12 centimeters of bowel, and left him in discontinuity. In other words, didn't hook up everything back up within the body. With the intent of performing a washout, that means cleaning everything out, making sure there's not infected, in the morning. He had no major vascular injuries otherwise. I've seen dozens of worse cases than this which survived, and nothing about his injuries suggested to me that he sustained a fatal wound. He was transferred back to the ICU and transfused 2 units of blood when his post-surgery crit came back at 20. In other words, he was stable and not on any pressors, and it seemed pretty routine. About 8 hours after he arrived, we were swarmed by LEOs, those are law enforcement officers, folks. And pretty much everyone except the attending, that's the head physician on the case, and few nurses were kicked out of the ICU, disallowing visiting hours, which are normally every odd hour, which is not at all done routinely. I'm still quoting. It was weird as hell. This is in the guy's write-up. At turnover that morning, we were instructed not to round on the VIP, that's Seth Rich, that came in last night. And that's exactly what the attending said. And no one, except for me and another resident, had any idea of who he was even talking about. No one here was allowed to see Seth except for my attending when he died. No code was called when he died. I rounded on patients literally next door, but was physically blocked from checking on him. I've never seen anything like it before, and while I can't say 100% he was allowed to die, I don't understand why he was treated like that. Take it how you may, I'm just one low-level doc. Something's fishy, though, that's for sure. So we take that dot. We then take the dot of Julian Assange saying that he did not get the information, absolutely no way, Jose, from Russia. He did not get it from a state actor. I mean, this is in numerous interviews, including with Hannity. And then you get Julian Assange offering a $20,000 reward for information leading to Seth Rich's murder. Now, why would he offer $20,000 for Seth Rich's murder information? This is not all simultaneous. This is kind of in a timeline. Then, we find this thing, Kim.com. This is a guy who worked with Julian Assange, kind of a rogue, controversial, etc. He comes out at the end of last week and says, and I'm paraphrasing now, that the he worked with Seth Rich to hack the DNC and get the information to Julian Assange, that Seth Rich may have been on his way or had a meeting planned the morning that he was murdered with the FBI, and bear that in mind, folks, for later on in this show. He may have had a meeting lined up with the FBI. Who was the FBI investigating at that time? Who were they looking at? Oh, that's right. Hillary and her server. And her classified emails. How interesting. In any event, I digress. So Kim.com says he's going to come out with a formal statement. He's consulting with his attorneys. You know, you can't make this up, right? This is a murder mystery deal. And he plans to release that sometime in the next week or two. But he made it clear that he knew, and he was willing to testify under certain conditions, since he's wanted in this country and he's a resident of New Zealand. He's willing to testify as to Seth Rich being the source of the WikiLeaks leaks, his complicity in those leaks along with Seth Rich, working with Seth Rich, and the fact that it was not the Russians. Oh, my God. In one fell swoop, you have the FBI, the DC police, Podesta, who I think I told you two shows ago had a comment saying we need to teach these leakers a lesson. The FBI, who's investigating Hillary, the server, her classified emails and other felonies, the foundation, etc., and who agreed, listen to this now, who agreed, and I've talked about this before, this is absolute fact, who agreed to not come in and take a look at the DNC server to determine who hacked it. Because the DNC, that is Mr. Podesta, Ms. Clinton, et cetera, at that time Wasserman Schultz, because they said, no, they had their own experts. They didn't. They're jumping up and down about the Russians hacking them, but they don't want the FBI looking at their server to figure out if it was the Russians and who in the Russians it was, right? Uh-huh. You bet. Once again, there's a million loose dots floating out there, virtually all of them factual, until I see the actual statement from Kim.com. I'm not going to tell you it's factual. I'm just going to tell you what he represented. This is his representations, in quotes, I might add, in a number of different articles, carried by a number of different networks, not ABC, NBC, WAPO, not any of that crowd, but a number of other news outlets. So, in one fell swoop, you have the FBI implicated. That also is Jim Comey, right? The then director of the FBI. You have Podesta, the campaign chairman for Hillary Baby. Maul, the other campaign chairman. You have Hillary Clinton herself. And if you want to listen to my shows on the other very suspicious murders, they're about a year ago. Just type in 47 murders. Or even just the number 47, and they'll come up. I did a three-part series on all the people who mysteriously died who were close to the Clintons. This is not Hillary's first barbecue. And if you think progressives who allow 500,000 people to die in Syria, or four people to die on the rooftops of Benghazi, if you think they give a damn about one guy who they think is going to stand in their way because he's leaking their scummy little emails, if you think they're going to let him stand in the way of them being in control of the most powerful country on earth, which is on the verge of a progressive makeover, you're just flat smoking dope. You're back in 1917 buying stuff over the counter at the drugstore. So that's Seth Rich. I'm following this story like a hawk. So is Sean Hannity. So is several others. And by the way, a lot of pushback. the new powers that be at Fox are pushing back on this story. Remember that the wife of one of the Rupert Murdoch's two sons worked for Clinton. You know, lots of dots, folks, lots of dots. You can connect the lines the way you want. All right, that brings us to special elections. So the good news, and I talked about it a little bit at the beginning of the show, is Gianforte won in Montana, despite not being the greatest candidate, despite not being particularly well-liked, and despite physically accosting a reporter the day before the election. However, there are four more special elections coming up. I believe that they are in Georgia, which, by the way, is very close. Karen Handel is a Republican candidate. She's running against that guy, Osloff. The Democrats have pumped $10 million, listen to this now, $10 million into a congressional race. More money than has ever been spent by multiples in a congressional race in the past. That's how desperate the Democrats are. And they're about neck and neck. The next one is in South Carolina, then there's one in Utah, and there's a special election for U.S. Senate in Alabama, because, of course, Jeff Sessions is now the Attorney General. If you look under the politics sections of the articles, and by the way, the Seth Rich articles are all posted there under Scandal and Treason. Scandal and Treason, you can read the Seth Rich articles for yourselves, and in fact, there's more than I even discussed this morning because there's not enough time. You got the highlights, as they say. The highlight bullets. No pun intended. Go to politics. And once again, folks, this is important. Put your money where your mouth is. Would you rather spend $20 now supporting these candidates, or would you rather spend tens and tens and tens of thousands down the road if the progressives get back in power or the conservatives don't hammer home their agenda? You know, screw the screws down in the coffin of the progressives for the next 40 years. This is kind of a no-brainer, isn't it? Take a look at the various articles places to donate to various outfits that are running these campaigns. You choose the one you want and donate 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 bucks. Put the money in. It makes a difference, particularly when you have the umpty-ump uber-rich of the left pumping in millions of dollars into these special elections. And in the first one, they lost. However, they didn't lose everything last week. They won two special elections for state legislative seats. Remember, state legislators are all important. I mean, in some ways, the state legislators are as important as the congressmen or the senators. I mean, that is your local government. Just ask the people in Colorado, a state that's been turned blue in the last 10 years by all sorts of nefarious ways, including illegal immigration and voter fraud. One of the legislative seats they won was in the New York Assembly in a Long Island district that Trump won 23% just 4 months ago. That's not great. That's not a good thing. And the gal who won, Christine Pellegrino, defeated Republican Thomas Gargiulo. I guess it was two Italians running in the race for the New York State Assembly. Pellegrino, by the way, was a delegate for Bernie Sanders at the Democratic National Convention. New Hampshire is the place where the other state legislative seat was lost. And if you remember, New Hampshire was decided, I think it was by 0.4% or 0.1% in terms of where the electoral votes went to either Hillary or Trump. Trump lost. Hillary won. So these are key things. All these local races, the congressional races, and, of course, the special Senate race in Alabama. Do your part. Talk to people in those states that you know. Have them talk to others and click on one of the deals there in, under politics down below, and send in some dough. You know, make a difference. Make a difference. Now we're to the budget. Okay, so everybody is screaming and yelling and all sorts of stuff about this budget, and oh, it's just horrible, and it's terrible, and grandma's going off the cliff, and the kids are going to die, and the world's going to end, and we're going to incinerate the ashes, and oh God, I'm so sad, I almost need a cup of coffee. Anyway, last year's budget, folks, was $3.5 trillion. That's the 2016 budget, Obama's last budget. Trump's new budget is $4.1 trillion. Now, just doing simple math and being a poor old hayseed in Wyoming, it doesn't sound to me like there's a lot of cuts going on. It sounds to me like we're spending $600 billion more than the last budget. And yes, is the EPA getting whittled down? Is the Department of Education getting whittled down? And several other meaningless departments, including, by the way, the State Department, that huge corrupt bureaucracy. Remember my story about the insurance company at the beginning? Huge corrupt bureaucracy that it is. And the Department of Justice, which has been used as a bludgeon, as a political tool, as an unconstitutional sword by Eric Holder and pathetic, and I think felonious, well, both of them, felonious Loretta Lynch. Yeah, some of those departments are getting whittled away. But all the things that the Democrats and the Republicans are crying about, like the food stamp program, and this and that, and SNAP, and Meals on Wheels, and, you know, all this pet crap. They are not getting cut, folks. The rate of increase is being slowed, and that is being slowed over 10 years. It's not all this year like they're trying to make you believe. When they say it's getting cut 10%, and that's going to be 10,000 kids that die. Oh, oh, my poor heart. Oh, quick, dial 911. No, no. The decrease in the program is 10% of last year's increase. In other words, if it increased 5% last year, it's only increasing 4.5% this year. It's still increasing. That's why, for a total budget, you're spending $500+ billion more this year than Barry's last budget last year. And by the way, of that $500 billion, because I know you lefties out there who listen to me and just hate me. Oh, my poor heart. So that you lefties don't start jumping, well, it's all going to defense, and this, no. $46 billion is going to defense, give or take a few billion, it's not done yet. The rest is all going where it always went. 90% of it to entitlements, food stamps, SNAP, Meals on Wheels, you name it, whatever. It doesn't touch Social Security or Medicare, which, by the way, it really needs to. It really needs to. But it doesn't touch any of those little pet programs. So this is all a bunch of political crap by both Republicans, Republican rhinos, and I was going to say Democrats, but why don't we just say progressives? There are no more Democrats. They're toast. Democrats are dinosaurs. They're extinct. One of the things that you should bear in mind is that a good bellwether of how drastic a budget is, and there's some great stuff in Trump's budget, by the way, I'm all for cutting the EPA and the Department of Justice, the Department of State, and all that stuff. But one of the things that you can discern from the market reaction to a budget proposal is whether the markets go up or down. And guess what? Since the budget proposal was made 3 days ago, the markets have gone up. Huh. You know, there's a funny sidelight to this. So the Democrats are talking about what a terrible budget this is. I think Nancy Pelosi called the killing budget. The killing budget. Like the Grim Reaper comes Donald Trump, killing women and children and the defenseless in front of him with his giant bloody Sith. Huh. You know, if this budget's so bad, I think what the Democrats ought to do is pass the damn thing unanimously and then hang it around Trump's neck. I mean, you know, you get hundreds of thousands of people dying out there because this bad budget, people starving and collapsing in the streets, and you'll probably get impeached. Might be easier than Russia. How's that for calling a bluff? You bet. All right. Oh, by the way, you know, remember that McCain, Rhino Graham, and Rhino Collins voted down the methane re-regulation, which I guess is getting redone now. Unbelievable. When asked about this budget, good old Lindsey Graham, from underneath his rhinoceros horn, said, and this was last Tuesday, I quote, "If fully implemented, President Donald Trump's proposed cuts to the State Department funding would lead to a lot of Benghazi situations." Oh, my God. Cut the hell out of the damn State Department. Put it in the military. And guess what? You won't have any Benghazi situations. All right. That's my comments on the budget. On the budget. Voter fraud. Nobody's covering this. Except, I think, me. So Donald Trump, quite quietly, although the ACLU has gotten wind of it, so they're kind of in an uproar, has established, he signed an executive order establishing a commission to review alleged voter fraud, voter rolls, voter registration, you name it, voter suppression all around the country. It's called the Advisory Commission on Election Integrity. And it's going to be chaired by Vice President Pence. Kansas Secretary of State Kris Kobach will be the vice chair of the commission. Kansas, by the way, has one of the strictest voter ID laws in the country. And no, it doesn't disenfranchise anybody. You can. There's a million ways to get a... I'm talking to my producer now because she's shaking her head. There's about 10 different forms of ID, I may be a little off, that you can use in Kansas, from driver's license to student cards to all sorts of stuff. You just have to have a picture ID, and if you're recently from a foreign country, you have to provide proof of citizenship, which should be rather easy to do. Anybody who's gone through the steps you need to take to become a citizen probably has his citizenship papers proudly displayed, readily available, and looked at often with a big smile, wouldn't you say? Anyway, so you have this commission. It's going to be two Democrats, two Republicans, and one person from the Department of Justice. And they'll be reporting back to Trump, I think, within 6 weeks. The Democrats who have heard about this, of course, like Bernie Sanders, quote, "The sole purpose of this commission is to propagate a myth and to give encouragement to Republican governors and state legislators to increase voter suppression." said Bernie Sanders. Oh, and then we have Chuck Schumer. Wow. Chuck Schumer. I don't know whether he's worse than Harry Reid or vice versa. Chuck Schumer said, quote, "It's a clear front for constricting the access to vote to poor Americans, older Americans, and above all, African Americans and Latinos," unquote. Gee, Chuck, are you trying to stir your base? All right. Anyway, we'll see where this goes, but I'm glad it's being done because it really needs it, folks. And I think the numbers are going to be shocking when it's all done. It's going to put to bed forever and once and for all the real myth, which is by the left, that there is no voter fraud. Or if there is, it's so minuscule, so tiny, so microscopic, to be absolutely of no force and effect whatsoever. I think we're going to find out something way different. I think we already have, right? Remember the Michigan recount? Remember the Pennsylvania recount? Remember the recount in Detroit, where the federal judge said, let's recount, and then they found, as they got into it, that, oh my God, in Democratic precincts, there were more ballots cast than voters registered. And he hastily said, okay, no more recount. Do you remember that? You can go back and listen to my show right after the election. Just vote. Just type in voter fraud and go to the last several shows, I believe, November and December. I have a whole bunch of situations like that. Now, let's talk about the left. So listen, you're watching what they're doing on the airwaves and in Congress. I think there's four different Senate and House committees investigating the Trump-Russia collusion. Four. It's no wonder these guys don't get anything done. They'll get any laws passed. In addition, you have the FBI doing whatever the hell they're doing, and who knows who else. And now you got a special counsel, although I think that's going to turn out very, very poorly with the Democrats, maybe in conjunction partly with the Seth Richards things. What do you think? But there's another tangent to what's going on, too. You have the press, you have the government, you have the deep state. You have the alt-left radical agitators, the violent alt-left, and they are the fascists, folks. Those kids yelling and screaming on campuses for professors, progressive professors, who happen to have read the Constitution, to get fired and blocking speakers and burning things and breaking windows and occupying buildings and, you know, running amok. That's part of it. But on a much deeper level, there is a basic violence in the alt-left now. I told you a little bit about in the last two shows, the liberal militias now starting to form, other stuff like that. Gave you some quotes. Here are some things that you probably have not heard. So the FBI arrested a guy who threatened Representative Martha McSally. She's a Republican from Arizona. She, by the way, won Gabby Gifford's old district, a swing district. Then there's a woman who pursued Representative David Kustoff, Tennessee, in her car, tried to run him off the road, and when he pulled over in a driveway with a staffer in the car, got out of her car and started beating on his windshield. Then, I'm just giving you the broad brush here. I mean, I'm just giving you some examples of how alt-left the alt-left has become. Dave Bratt, he's the Republican of Virginia. He had a town hall. He had a little 11-year-old special needs child who died. Made a big impact on his life. He mentioned in talking to his quote-unquote constituents, in many cases these people being bussed in, paid for by Soros money, that people's rights are God-given. I mean, isn't that kind of the first line of the Constitution, Declaration of Independence? Quote, this is him telling what happened after he said that. Quote, they booed God, they booed the pastor, they booed the prayer, they booed the name of the church, they booed when I said rights come from God. That's a fundamental tenet of Western civilization. I mean, I didn't think that was partisan. Further north, New Jersey, Representative Tom MacArthur, another Republican. This is the guy, by the way, who had the special needs daughter. And as he's talking about her in the context of health care, etc., people start shouting, shame, we've heard this story. And he tried to tell them that that little child in 11 years shaped his life more than anybody. And they were yelling, you know, don't waste our time, write a book about it. Wow. These are just some examples of the violence on the left, and it's increasing. Oh, should I give them some more? My producer says give you a few more examples just so you can see how, because this really is pervasive. I mean, I've picked states that are widely separate just to give you an idea of, like, how widespread. What a concerted effort. It's not widespread happen chance, folks. This is a plan. There's a lot of money behind it. It is to disrupt Trump's agenda, which is the dismantling of the progressive takeover of America. Nothing less than that. It is the heart and soul of the current and the end battle for the Republic. Don't kid yourselves. Andrew Griffin, another lawmaker, has received three death threats during the course of the health care debate. Kevin Cramer, Republican from North Dakota, another entirely separate part of the country. Some guy attacked him and tried to take dollar bills from the guy's wallet and shove it into the lawmaker's suit pocket. That was reported, by the way, by the Bismarck Tribune. Jeff Fortenberry, Republican in Nebraska. His little girl goes out of the house to find a big sign right by the front door, staked in the front yard, that says, traitors put party above country. Do the right thing once, shit head. Excuse the French, folks. That's what the sign said. Traitors put party above country. Do the right thing for once, blank head. How's that? So they're going to the guy's house and frightening his children? Wow. What brave folks. Representative Ted Yoho, a Republican from Florida. His Gainesville, Florida office was vandalized. His staff was threatened. One female left a message on the offering answering machine saying, quote, next time I see you, I'm going to beat your effing ass, end quote. All right. So, I think you get the message. You want to fight back? You fight back with information. You don't waste your time on the 30% you're never going to reach. You go for the people in the middle. You contribute your 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 bucks to these special elections. You call your friends in those states and districts, and you make sure they get out the vote. I'm not a big fan of GN40, but I'm no fan at all of Rob Quist. And I'm no fan at all. In fact, I despise the progressives. Anti-American as they are. Anti-individual liberty as they are. Anti-constitution as they are. You should listen to, if you have not, The New Civil War. I believe it was 2 or 3 weeks ago. Just type New Civil War in search bar. It'll come right up. I think that was a pretty good show that kind of set out the Civil War between left and... It's not really even between left and right. It's between people who believe in individual freedoms, American values, and the Constitution, and people who believe in globalism, no nationalism, open borders, collective, and government knows best. It's really night and day. Listen to that show. I think this will put this all in perspective. Which kind of brings us to the other prong, which, of course, is the deep state. And I brought the deep state, the notion of the deep state, to you because I had seen it one other place. Fabulous article. I read the whole article, in fact. I believe it was by Doug Casey. And you can type in deep state in the search bar and go back to my shows of, give or take, 2 years ago, maybe three even, and listen to those. Because I was warning about what's going on now 3 years ago. Nobody was talking about it. So we have a very interesting set of events over this week. Number one, we have the leakheads, the deep state leakheads, actually putting national security in jeopardy, maybe even NATO security, by leaking stuff, which the New York Times was only too glad to publish, about the Manchester bombing and the poor victims over there, etc., to the point that the UK actually suspended intelligence sharing. And they are one of the, what's called the Five Eyes, the five key players around the world who share intelligence on terror, Islamic extremism, etc. Israel is another, by the way. That's how pissed off the Brits were, and rightly so, that the stuff they were sharing with American intelligence, sensitive stuff in the middle of their investigation, when they're trying to close a dragnet on other people in this network so that more Brits don't get killed, and the American intel services, the deep staters, the same guys who are leaking all this other crap and making up 90% of it, they said, we're not sharing information with you anymore. Trump got it straightened out with May, the British Prime Minister, at the G20 meeting. So it's back on again, but tentatively. The Israelis have also kind of changed the way they share information, by the way, with us over the last week because of these leaks. These leakers, folks, they need to be found. They need to be prosecuted. Basically, Barack Obama has started a trend toward lawlessness, which must be stamped out. Must be stamped out. And it's all intentional on his part. Because it tears at the roots of the foundation, the rule of law. And, of course, all these leaks are gladly promoted, promulgated, twisted, distorted, omitted, and misrepresented in the press. The Washington Post in the last week says that the Russian probe reaches all the way into the White House. Yeah? Really? And another paper said the highest levels of government. Senior White House advisor is under scrutiny by investigators, someone very close to the president. And then, of course, in the last day, you probably heard about Kushner, you know, the son-in-law. Some of these moron left-wing media outlets, including the national TV stuff, are calling him a person of interest. I hate to tell you, folks, you can look this up, okay? This is not magic. There's no such thing in a federal investigation as a quote-unquote person of interest. Period. Period. So that starts making you wonder about the entire rest of the story, does it not? And by the way, all these stories that are coming out, okay, and there's one, you know, there's one or two a day, all of them fuzzy-wuzzy, fuzzy-bottom, you know, smelling of swamp muck, unverified, many of them, like the majority, proven within 12 to 24 hours to be absolutely incorrect, and then never corrected by the original news source that let them out. And my personal opinion, by the way, this is opinion. I mean, I don't think we'll ever know. But I think that a lot of this stuff began with Hillary's server. The fact that she could have a server and she could bandy about classified information emboldened all these deep staters to say, you know, if she can do it, and Barry can do it, and Valerie can do it, and Susan Rice can do it, hell, if they can break the law and nothing happens, I can do it too. I'm quite convinced it plays a role. By the way, in each and every one of the stories, you guys, if you get a chance, I mean, just for fun, you can laugh. Don't get angry. Get even. Send some money. Call your friends. Okay? Let's screw the wood screws down on the coffin, the progressive coffin, and keep their ideas at least nailed down for the next 40 years. But in every single one of these stories, you read them. I read them. Here is what you're going to find. This is the verbiage that every single one of these outrageous stories uses when they're identifying sources or the person who's in question, you know, kind of the subject of the article. Quote, according to people familiar with the matter, unquote. Quote, someone close to the president, according to these people, who would not further identify the official, unquote. Quote, the people said, unquote. Quote, people familiar with the investigation said, unquote. Quote, those familiar with the case said, unquote. Quote, the people familiar with the matter, unquote. Quote, the people familiar with the matter said, unquote. These are the sources for these stories, folks? Really? Okay. I'll let you make your determination, and I have a feeling it will be very similar to mine. Sources of amusement only. And as GN40's election in Purple, Montana, being a lousy candidate, not well-liked in the state, and beating up a reporter the day before the election indicate, it not highly believed anywhere on the planet Earth. Which leads us to James Comey. I told you my jury was still kind of out on him. My jury has now rendered a verdict. With the stuff that's coming out in the last 2 weeks since his firing, James Comey is not only out for James Comey, but James Comey doesn't give a damn. He doesn't give a damn about the rule of law whatsoever. He's really kind of an insult to the FBI. I don't know if he was in the past, but in the last year, maybe year and a half, he's an insult to the FBI. What's coming out of some of these investigations now is that the FBI was actively involved in the illegal spying and unmasking of American citizens in conjunction with the Obama White House, Susan Rice, Ben Rhodes, etc., etc., etc. And then, upon investigation, remember all this hoopla over the last week? Comey's memo, his contemporaneous notes that he took during the February meeting with Donald Trump, where Donald Trump asked him not to, the exact words were, gee, do you really have to, you know, keep going after Michael Flynn? He's a good guy. Remember all that? That was in February. Comey made the mistake of coming out or leaking to the New York Times. It's all through leaks, you know. that his contemporary notes were of the February meeting with the White House. Well, guess what? If you look back through Jim Comey's testimony on May 3rd in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee, James Comey, then still FBI director, testified under oath, that there was no interference with impediment, or attempt to influence the investigation by anyone. In fact, he kind of went off on a tangent in that May 3rd stuff. The question was asked by Senator Mazie Hirono. She's a Democrat from Hawaii. She asked if the Attorney General or senior officials at the Department of Justice or someone else could stop an FBI investigation. His response was, quote, "It would be a big deal to tell the FBI to stop doing that without an appropriate purpose," unquote. Quote, "But I'm talking about a situation where we were told to stop something for a political reason. That would be a very big deal. It's not happened in my experience." Again, by the way, this was after he testified that nobody has interfered with this investigation whatsoever. That was his testimony on May 3rd. I guess he had a brain fart, you know, the anxiety of being fired, when he said that his notes of his meeting where Trump tried to do exactly what he was talking about here in his Senate testimony was in February. Like I said, either the notes are contrived, the notes are a lie. By the way, nobody has seen them yet. Or he perjured himself in front of the Senate. Take your pick. All right. That is the show for this morning, folks. We've covered a lot of stuff in a reasonable period of podcast time. I long ago lost my poor AM people, but most of them, I think, tune into the podcast. Did you know that we are now over 1.4 million, is it? Somewhere in there, 1.4 million cumulative listeners. Wow. And that fully, more than 70% are via our website, that was a Freudian slip. I'm trying to get book four out. The book site, I'll tell you what, I'll take this opportunity to plug the books. www.threadswestseries.com. I will tell you that I'm listening to the audiobooks that Jack Bear read for the first three books for the second time. They are really, 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 really good. I mean, they are really good. I drive by exits without even knowing I'm listening so intently, and I've read these books 50 times, maybe 100 times with editing. Try out those audios, and the USBs are terrific, clear as a bell, easy, they're just terrific. And I believe that the publishers have a special going on for Memorial Day. You can check with the website, www.threadswestseries.com. Updates on the unfortunately missed date of May 25th for the release of Moxon tracks to you shortly. Now, back to where I was headed with this. About more than 70% of our listeners are now listening on the website on therightsideradio.com or on the podcast. And I want to thank you all you great listeners, even those of you who are way left-leaning and simply monitoring me or listening to me because you just need to get a big lump in your heart when you hear my voice. I'm sure you're all nodding in agreement. I want to thank all of you listeners for the support. I love bringing you this show. It's kind of something I do for America. And it's fitting that I say that because this is Memorial Day. And we'll be celebrating the hundreds of thousands of men and women who have died for us, for you and me and our families, our children, our children's children, who have died for us, for the freedoms, for the Constitution, for our values, for the properties we own, for the votes we make, and for our rights, for me to broadcast and you to listen to a show like this. Thank you, men and women of the American Armed Forces, all the way back to the Lexington and Concord, right up to the current times in the sandy, hot hellholes of Afghanistan, Iraq, and Syria. We salute you. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. You have a great week.
Please remember, if you've missed any shows, just click on Show Archive and you'll find all of his shows. We look forward to seeing you here again next week for another episode of Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side.